Notice those last two songs seem to fit really well with the sermon that I preached 2 weeks ago, right? Out of John chapter 4. Well, that's because we're going to go back to John chapter 4 tonight. Don't worry, I'm not preaching the same sermon again. I'm actually looking at the passage a little differently this week than I looked at 2 weeks ago. My dad's out of town now, so I was trying to figure out what to preach on, and the Lord laid it on my heart to preach kind of a little bit of a series through the book of John, but don't worry, I'm not going to preach through the whole book of John in 2 weeks. But what I am going to do is I want to look at one theme that is found through the book of John and just go to a couple different places in the book of John and look at that theme. So we're going to start today in John chapter 4 with the story, with the when Jesus is talking to the Samaritan woman. And the theme we're going to be looking at is the theme of the physical versus the spiritual. The conflict and the dichotomy between the two. It's one of the many themes that runs throughout the whole book of John. And if you read through the book of John, if you study it, you will find this idea of physical versus spiritual cropping up in multiple passages. Today we're going to look at where it crops up in the light in this discussion that Jesus has with the Samaritan woman. Sunday we're going to be looking at John chapter 3. Where Jesus is dealing with Nicodemus, and the same theme pops up there in a slightly different form, but it's still the same idea of the physical versus the spiritual. So that's what we're going to be doing for the next couple of days. So we're going to look, tonight, we're going to look at John chapter 4 again. Tonight, we're going to focus on two specific parts of the passage and look more closely at part of this conversation between Jesus and the Samaritan woman. And as we look at this passage, as we look at this conversation with the woman at the well, we're going to see that, like most humans, the woman keeps talking about the physical things. And the reason I call her the woman is just because I don't know her name. If I had a name for her, I'd call her by her name, because the woman sounds it gets old after a while. But she kept bringing things to the physical realm, and Jesus was trying to take her to the spiritual ideas, to the spiritual realm. And so we're going to look at that in this passage. And Jesus is telling her about the spiritual alternative to the physical things that she's depending upon. So we're going to start in verse chapter 7. It says, "There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith unto thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us this well, and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. So first, Jesus is going to deal with two issues. We're going to see two issues where the physical versus the spiritual comes up in this passage. And the first one is the issue of water, the illustration of water. Now, Jesus is sitting on this well as the woman approaches to draw her water for the day. And when she arrives, he asks her for a drink of water. Now, the last time we looked at this passage, we went into great detail why she responded the way she did, didn't we? Now, Jesus asked her for a drink of water, and I'm pretty sure that Jesus was probably thirsty by that point, don't you think? He had just walked with his disciples quite a distance to that point, and then he sat down. They went to go buy some food in the town, and he sat on the well. I'm sure he was pretty thirsty. Don't you think walking all that distance would make you thirsty, especially in that kind of climate? I think so. And we have to remember, Jesus was 100% human when he was here on this earth. He was 100% God as well, but he was human. He had the same physical weaknesses that we have. He thirsted, he hungered, he needed sleep, he felt pain, and all of those things. So he was thirsty. So I'm sure he was thirsty, but I find it interesting that he never did get that drink of water in the passage, as far as we can tell, did he? Jesus was using the physical water, a real substance, a physical thing in the world, to open a door to have a spiritual conversation with this woman. Now, usually, if you approach someone, a stranger, and you want to talk to them about spiritual things, usually they're not going to be very open to that discussion, are they? Sometimes they are, but sometimes they're not. But Jesus, he started by talking about a physical thing, water. And then he took that physical water and he morphed the conversation, he transitioned the conversation into a discussion of spiritual things. I find that interesting. And while we don't have the omnipotent or omniscience that Jesus had to always know exactly how to do that, that is something we can learn a little bit from and attempt to apply in our own lives. And so the same reason, and this is the same reason some preachers and speakers will tell a funny story at the beginning of a sermon or a speech. Because that will grab the attention of the audience. They'll get them to listen so that then they can segue into something more serious and tell them what they really want to talk about. So last time we talked about why this surprised the Samaritan woman, because Jesus was a Jew. She was a Samaritan, and Jews hated Samaritans. Now, as I said before, the water that we see Jesus asking for, it's physical, real water in this world. And what is water? Well, water is a life-sustaining liquid that we need to live, don't we? I mean, how long can a human go without food? A couple of weeks at least, right? How long can we go without water? A couple days. Water is very, very important for life, isn't it? There is nothing sinful or wrong with physical water that quenches our thirst. When I'm talking about the physical versus spiritual in this series that we're doing, we're not saying that the physical is sinful and the spiritual is holy. That's not the comparison. That's not what's happening. The physical is earthly, the spiritual is heavenly. But just because it's physical, just because it's of this earth, doesn't make it sinful in and of itself. Water is a good thing. Physical water is a wonderful thing. You know, after I've ride my bike for 30 miles, I like water. I like water a lot. Because it quenches my thirst and it sustains me and it helps me. It gives me what I need. Water refreshes. Water revitalizes. Water quenches our thirst. And water is necessary for life. So Jesus asks her for physical water. And her response is, well, why are you talking to me? You're a Jew, you shouldn't be talking to me. And then Jesus' response to her, instead of telling her why he was talking to her, he says, well, if you knew who you were talking to, you would ask me for water. And I would give you living water. Now, we're talking about a different type of water. You see, when Jesus says, if you knew who I was, you would ask me for water, he's not talking about physical water anymore. He's transitioned to talking about spiritual water. He calls it living water. Now let me ask you, does physical water create life? Does it create life? Or does it merely sustain life? Water is a necessary thing for life to continue on this earth, but water does not create life. Water merely sustains it, allows it to continue. However, this spiritual water is different. So then Jesus offers her a drink of water. He says, if you knew who you were talking to, you would ask me for water and I would give you living water. And now she's confused. She's like, wait a second. You just asked me for water. Why are you now offering me water? That doesn't make any sense. You don't even have a bucket to draw the water out of the well. How are you going to give me water? Are you greater than Jacob? And see, Jesus is offering her spiritual water, but what is she still thinking about? She's still thinking about that physical water, isn't she? She thinks he's talking about the water from that well that will quench thirst. And so she says, are you greater than Jacob, our father, who dug this well to feed his cattle and his children and his grandchildren and everyone? And once again, instead of answering the question she asks, Jesus answers the real question. He says, the water I give if you drink the water that I have, you will never thirst again. If you drink this water out of the well, you're going to thirst again. He's saying, if you drink the spiritual water I give you, then you will never again thirst spiritually. But if you drink the physical water in this well, you're going to have to come back and get some more the next day and drink it, because you're never going to be fully satiated for water. You're going to have to keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back. And the words he says is very interesting. He says, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. So the water that you draw out of the well, you drink it, it satiates your thirst, it satisfies that physical desire and need that your body has, but it only does so temporarily. But this living water that Jesus is offering, he says that it will be a spring of water bubbling up out of your life. That's the spiritual water. And she still doesn't get it. She looks at him, she goes, okay, well then give me some of this water. I'm pretty sure that she was like, okay, crazy man, okay, I'm calling your bluff. Give me some of this water. Give me some of this water. Let me see you get it out. And then Jesus says, well, go get your husband and bring him. He's just, it's like every time she thinks she's got him, he goes off in a complete different direction. And so then he says, go get your husband. She says, oh, well, I don't have a husband. He says, yeah, you're right. You don't have a husband. You had five husbands, and now you're living with a guy who's not your husband. But you are telling the truth. You don't right now have a husband. Why did Jesus tell her that? Because Jesus was now beginning to reveal himself to her, to reveal who he was. Because up until that point, who did she think he was? Just some Jewish guy sitting on a well. And then as the conversation is progressing, she's probably thinking, okay, now I know why this guy's talking to me. He's crazy. That explains it. That makes perfect sense, because Jews don't talk to Samaritans. So this guy's crazy, so that's why he's talking to me. And then he starts telling her things that he shouldn't know. So he starts removing the veil just a little bit to let her know who he is. Sir, I perceive you're a prophet. So now the conversation, now she's like, oh, wait, whoa. I think this guy's a prophet. He told me things that he shouldn't know. Only way he could have known that is if he was a prophet. Now this water that Jesus was offering her, it wasn't just water that sustains life. You see, our physical water sustains life. It makes it possible for life to continue and to grow and to live. But the water that Jesus was offering, the spiritual water that Jesus giveth, it creates life. It creates spiritual life in our hearts and in our lives. Unlike spiritual water, it will always be there. Once you get it, you got it. So, then Jesus revealed himself. So then she's like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, this guy might not be crazy after all. And I'm sure she doesn't want to keep talking about her five ex-husbands. It seems like a rather touchy subject, wouldn't you think? So then she's like, oh, okay, well, let me ask you a question. Isn't that what everyone does when they're trying to change the subject? Especially when they're talking to her. Well, let me ask you a question. And she comes up with a theological question. But this question just plays right into Jesus' hands, as it were. It just continues the conversation right where he wants it to go. Because she says, so let me ask you. You Jews, you say that we should worship at the temple. But our fathers say that we can worship in the mountains. Well, where should we worship? And this was a source of contention between the Jews and Samaritans. This was actually one of the reasons the Jews did not like the Samaritans. Now, does anybody know historically why the Samaritans worshipped in the mountains? It goes back to when, I think it's Jeroboam and Rehoboam, and I can never keep the two straight. But one of them had the southern kingdom, and one of them got the northern kingdom. What? Okay, Jeroboam was in the north. Their names are just so similar, I can never keep them straight. So Jeroboam, when Jeroboam took the northern tribes, and then Rehoboam kept the southern tribes, what was in the southern kingdom? The temple, right? Now, what was one of the things that unified the Jewish people as a nation? Their religion, their worship. So Jeroboam's sitting there and he's seeing his people go to the temple to worship God. And they're having to go into southern Israel. They're having to go into the nation of Judah to do so. And he's a smart man. And he says, that's not a good thing. Because if they're going to the temple to worship, they might one day say, you know what? Why are we separate nations? Let's just get rid of our king and go back to Rehoboam. And so Jeroboam thought, oh, that's not a really good idea. So he built some groves in the mountains for the people to worship God in. And he changed the way the people in the northern kingdom worshiped God to protect his political power. And even in Jesus' day, the Samaritans, which were the small remnant left that had intermingled with the Assyrians and intermarried them, so they were half Jewish, they were still worshiping in those mountains, while the Jews were still worshiping in the temple. So that was one of the big areas of contention, because the Jews were thinking, well, if you guys really want to be Jewish, then why aren't you worshiping in the temple? See, that just proves you guys are horrible people and we don't want to have anything to do with you. And so she brings this up. Now, if she brought this up with a normal Jewish person, do you think it would have probably created quite the heated debate? Yeah, probably, and it would have totally changed the topic and gotten him off of her five husbands and all that stuff. But Jesus, he turns it around again. It says, the woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thine husband. In that thou saidest truly. The woman saith unto him, we're in verse 19, sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship, ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. So she brings up this whole debate over the worship. Now, did you notice Jesus did answer the question? He said, you know, ye worship what ye know not. We know what we worship. That's the answer. But then he said, but that doesn't matter, because the hour cometh and now is when true worshipers shall worship him in spirit and in truth. You see, how did the Jewish people worship God? They worshiped him in physical ways, didn't they? They worshiped him by bringing offerings to the temple and sacrificing those physical offerings to God to pay for their sins. They went to a physical location, the temple, and that's where they had to worship God. That's where they had to offer those sacrifices. They had to talk to the priests who were physical, real people. Those were their intercessors before God. And so their worship system was physical, wasn't it? Jesus acknowledges that. He says, yes, right now we worship him in the temple, and you don't even know what you're worshiping. But the hour cometh when the true worshipers shall worship him in spirit and in truth, because God is a spirit. So he answers the question she asks, but he answers a whole lot more. Jesus was not talking to her because he wanted to get into a meaningless theological debate. And this is something we have to be careful of when we're trying to deal with our unsaved family members and stuff like that, is they will always try to find a way to get you talking about pointless theology. And I'm not saying theology is pointless. Theology is very important. But there are some aspects of theology, there are some debates that are had over the Bible that really are pointless when you get to it. You know, the old standard tried and true, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? Well, it doesn't really matter. But there's plenty of even Bible stuff, you know, stuff in the Bible that we don't know exactly who, we don't know exactly the truth. And if we get so focused on arguing about what this passage means, we lose the big picture of the gospel and we forget to tell them the gospel because we're arguing about whether Adam had a belly button. And that's when you get asked a lot. Every atheist thinks they get you. Oh, well, did Adam have a belly button? It doesn't matter. He could have. He could not have. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. But those are the kind of questions people will try to get you off topic on. Or why are there, if the Bible is true, why are there so many denominations? They try to get you off on all these rabbit trails to get you to stop talking about the stuff that's really getting to them. Because people don't like talking about their sin, do they? Do you like talking about your sin? I know I don't. I don't like admitting to other people that I did wrong. That's why it's so hard to ask people for forgiveness, isn't it? Because to truly confess your sin and ask someone for forgiveness, you got to admit that you were wrong. And we don't want to do that. Because we want to believe we're always right, don't we? I know I do. I like being right. I don't like being wrong. And so Jesus does answer her question, but then he answers an even more important question. You see, the Jews had up to this point had to worship God in a physical location with physical means and physical methods. But now worship was changing because Jesus had come, the Messiah had come, and now it was time for people to start worshiping in spirit and in truth. So what was the point of all the physical worship system? What was the point of the law? What was the point of all that physical, those physical trappings of worship that God had given to the Jews? We're talking about this in my class on Romans right now. The point of it was to paint a picture of what was to come. Who was the sacrifice that saves us from sin? Jesus Christ. So what was the purpose of the sacrifice of the animals in the Old Testament? It was a picture of Jesus Christ. Now, was it a perfect picture of Jesus Christ? No. Hebrews refers to it as a shadow of the things to come. You see, all the things that God told them to do in the Old Testament were an imperfect picture. They were a shadow pointing them towards Christ, pointing them towards the cross, so that when Jesus came, see, those were the physical representations of the spiritual that was to come. And so it wasn't sinful, that old worship system, because that was what God had given them, and that was what God had told them to do. But it was a picture of what he was going to do and what he was going to send in the form of Christ. And Christ was the spiritual sacrifice for all of our sins. And he is also the living water, isn't he? We see that in other passages. Christ refers to himself as the living water. We're going to get into a couple of those these next couple weeks. And so the conclusion, so then the woman, she doesn't really know what to say. She says, well, when the Messiah comes, he's going to tell us everything. Jesus looks at her and says, I am the Messiah. Except he says, he that speaketh to thee am he. He says it in a more flowery way, but he basically tells her, well, I am the Messiah. I'm telling you right now. And this is when he finally pulls off that veil completely and reveals who he is to the woman. Now, do you think if Jesus, as soon as he met her, had said, hey, I'm the Messiah, do you think she would have listened to him? Probably not. Instead, Jesus knew exactly what she needed to hear and how she needed to hear it. And so he used the physical things of this world, water, to give her an illustration of the spiritual truths that he was teaching her about the living water. Now, I don't think she fully understood what Jesus was saying when she ran into the town to tell everyone about what happened. Because it takes a while. I don't even fully understand everything that Jesus is trying to tell us. I don't know about you, but every time I read the Bible, I start to understand it just a little more. But it's still not something I'm like, oh, I get it completely, 100%. You know, the gospel message is an interesting thing. It's so simple, a child can understand it, yet it's so complex that the smartest man in the world can never fully understand the depths of it. So she didn't fully understand, but she did understand that Jesus was more than just a Jewish man. I think she did truly believe that he was the Messiah who had come to save the world. Throughout this whole conversation, Jesus used the physical things of the earth to point to spiritual truths and realities that this woman was not yet aware of. The physical part of us is real, and there are many physical things we must do to keep our physical bodies going. We must eat, drink, sleep, exercise, etc., and all of these things are important. However, as important as these physical things are in our lives, there are more important things. The spiritual things that Jesus offers to us. As we go through this study of physical versus spiritual in the book of John, we will see that too often we as humans focus so much on the immediate and urgent things of the present physical reality that we often miss the more important spiritual things that Jesus is offering us because we become so focused on the physical. And we're going to see that in a couple of the passages we look at later, especially the passage that comes after the feeding of the 5,000. We'll see them wrestling with this very thing. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for your word. We thank you so much for this living water that you have given us so that we may never thirst again, Lord. I pray that you'll help us.